Welcome to Writing and Publishing with Dumbold Bob. Thanks for joining us for this episode. Let's get started. Welcome to the first of two bonus episodes for the Writing and Publishing with Dumbold Bob podcast. And honestly, these are very unexpected episodes. I was not planning on bonus episodes at this point in the run, and like many things from my work, there is a story. There's a strange set of obstacles I've found in organizing the content and presentation so far for this podcast. Eventually, I think I figured out what it was, and once I did, I relaxed a little bit. See, when I deliver this as an in-person appearance, I always show up early for any event, maybe a half an hour to an hour early. It depends on how far I have to travel, if I think I'm going to have to set up some extra materials or something might need to be done beforehand. It gives me a chance to unpack a few things, get myself prepared, and check out the space. And if nothing else, I arrive early so I'm definitely on time, can catch my breath, and prepare. The side benefit of the time is that I also get to greet many folks as they arrive. I can talk to them a bit, exchange some introductions, and usually find out a bit of what brought them to the presentation. And those moments almost, without exception, end up modifying the content for that night's specific program. Think of it this way. If I have a chance to talk to three or four people before I start, and they all tell me they want to know about agents and how to find publishers, I'm going to speak a bit more about those subjects during the time that I have, and in turn, perhaps reduce some of the other content I offer for, say, something like press kits and social media efforts. Now let's explore that same idea as far as the podcast is concerned. With as much experience and material as I have assembled, in stacks of notepads and computer files and just on scraps of material all over the place, even having spent time sorting it out and deciding how to approach the podcast episodes, even having spoken to friends and other writers about where to concentrate and how to design a good portion of my early episodes, one thing I didn't have were those bonus pre-event discussions that could confirm exactly what you might be looking to find. So, in the early episodes, I tried to set the stage. The idea was that somewhere around episodes 5, 6, and 7, which is right around where we are now, I would make the turn and start episodes that took deeper dives into very specific topics. The generalities would be completed, it would be time to begin the show, so to speak. Then, well, I lost my voice. Literally. A few personal events in December set up a scenario where I decided to break for about 4 weeks. Normally, that would have been about two release dates for the Writing and Publishing podcast, and then I was going to get back to it in January. A cold had other ideas. It left me struggling to speak, and I went through January and February pretty much unable to talk for more than a few seconds at a time. Recording new material wasn't possible. The break was extended, and that's where the unexpected happened. Basically, you folks reached out, and in a way, I got something of that pre-event discussion after all. Over the past couple of months, you've been reaching out with emails and messages, sending along thoughts and questions, asking about material I think I'm going to cover, or I always thought I was going to cover, but you came up with some requests for material you'd like me to cover, or some interesting aspects of material that I really hadn't thought about in the way that you're asking. I took that material, narrowed it down into 8 specific questions, and each of these two bonus episodes is going to focus on 4 of them. Here in episode 1, we're going to tackle the ideas of whether traditional publishing methods or self-publishing is better, the basics about finding a place for publishing your work when you self-publish, a few thoughts about the writing process, and what I consider to be the most frustrating and difficult part of the entire writing and publishing a book process. A common theme for the answers in both of these bonus episodes is going to be that I have plans for creating a full episode on many of these ideas, if not all of these ideas, and in some cases, more than one episode on them. And in the case of the first question, I already know I'm going to be developing 2. So these answers are going to be giving just some basic responses and not 30 to 50 minutes in 5 different segments and go on for 15 hours on their own. Are you ready to get started? Let's get to it. To start things out, here's a question that asks, what's better for an author when it comes to publishing a book? Traditional publishing or self-publishing? Traditional. It's traditional. Wedged tightly up against all of the time, without exception, it's traditional. I'm sure we could sit down, consider a few options, look over some self-publishing scenarios, and create a great example or two that works as a way of self-publishing clearly benefiting the author more. But the reality is, the exceptions prove the rule. And in this case, the rule has a lot of solid evidence on its side. As a simple way of explaining it, let's just consider two things here. First up, book sales. I've talked about the numbers a lot, and that's going to continue. I've mentioned how the numbers can be unreliable in many ways, from misleading and wrong in some situations to bordering on lies in others. I've also said that even with all of that needing to be considered, you can still use the numbers in valuable ways. Consider online reviews. I think most of us know that when reading a bunch of online reviews, you have to be careful. Are they fake? Are the bad ones accurate? And on and on. But if you read them with a critical approach, with the focus of a skeptical eye, and with the understanding of the information that you are trying to get at the forefront of your thoughts, quite often those reviews can be helpful. And the same thing is true with our book sale and royalty and so on numbers. Comparing traditional sales to self-published sales cannot be apples to apples. It can never be apples to apples. And there are plenty of reasons to believe certain factors aren't incorporated into the results. The fact remains, they're still the numbers we have, and they tend to come up, often, closely enough, in similar ratios, with enough consistency, that we'd be foolish not to at least see what they're saying. And what do those numbers say? Well, they say that the averages of sales favor a traditional book release by a rate of roughly 12 to 1. And those numbers say that the dollars an author can expect to earn favor a traditional book release by about 7 to 1. The done really quickly first look gives a check mark to traditional. And it doesn't get any easier in other areas for self-publishing. For instance, a second thought, the credibility factor, considered in a sweeping generalization, of course. A store like Barnes & Noble rarely includes a self-published author in any kind of in-store appearance. Not a book signing, not a book reading, not as a guest panelist for an author's presentation. And by rarely, I mean it's so close to impossible, the reasons why they did it are blatantly obvious as to why they did it. Think Lady Gaga self-publishes a book to accompany her latest musical project and reaches out about a signing. They're not going to say no to Lady Gaga. When you write an email or a press release or whatever and send it to places you hope will schedule an event with you or provide some type of article or coverage, the reality is that being able to say HarperCollins or Simon & Schuster or so on is releasing your book immediately adds something. It gives your project a weight, kind of an understood nod of quality and professionalism. A quick but recognized stamp of approval that as a self-published author, we don't have and often need to overcome. Right out of the gate on our bonus episode, we come across a question that leads us to a subject that's going to be big for us coming up soon. We're going to be wading into these waters again down the road, frequently. And there are so many more areas to consider, doors that a traditionally published book have opened just because they are a traditionally published and not self-published project. But the check marks keep lining up in that column. It's better to be traditionally published. Our next question is, what is the right place to go, the best group to work with, for publishing my book? There is no single perfect place for a writing project to be directed for self-publishing. Consider, One project has an author that always dreamed of a hardcover edition of the book with a dust jacket that included a picture with a quick bio on one of the flaps. Another project involves images, color photographs, and some types of art. Another author has worked online to build friendships and networks that cross international borders. Even though based in the United States, there is a good chance an equal number of books will be bought in places like the US, Canada, France, and Japan. And a fourth project involves an author that these days almost exclusively reads books electronically or listens to audio editions. And this person wants tablets and digital editions, along with looking for streaming platforms and such, to be the biggest areas of distribution. Those four ideas in place. Can you see how when one author needs affordable ways to get books shipped in America and Australia, while another is looking to ensure the consistency of image quality, it's possible that the same place might not be the best option for both authors? Now consider someone that needs a team that can really present an ebook that takes advantage of every possibility a tablet or smartphone app might offer a reader or benefit an author, or someone that wants to record an audiobook. There is no one answer for the best place to look. So, how do you find one that's the best for you? Research. When you meet another author, one that is self-published, ask them who they used and why they picked them. Ask what that place got right, and always ask what they weren't as good with. You're going to want to look online and hit the search engines, multiple search engines. Ask terms for searches such as the best places for an author to self-publish, then ask for the worst places to self-publish. And then completely change the search terms and phrases. For instance, ask about the best places for an author to self-publish. Then ask for the results on authors share their favorite places to self-publish. And then ask best self-publishing options for authors, and on and on. Then change things up entirely. For instance, what's important to you? A hardcover with a dust jacket? International shipping? Kindle? Okay, then go there. Ask about self-publishing companies with best royalties for authors. Ask about scary stories for self-published authors creating audiobooks of their work. And you see where this is going. Maybe even use a few different search engines and let their own methodology for determining results in different ways than another search engine work to your benefit by bringing up additional results. And as you do this, you're going to wind up starting to see some names come up over and over and over again. This top 10 list has three of the names that also appeared in the Next Place's Best Of article. Start researching them a bit by including their names in your search terms. We're going to be exploring this in more depth later on, but like putting together a decent puzzle, once you get your thoughts wrapped around it and start setting up the pieces, you'll find yourself getting a bit more comfortable with the information you're gathering, how it fits together, and what steps you might want to take initially. That's the best way to approach finding a publisher. Our third question is kind of a two-parter. What do I need to know about the process of writing my book? And are there things I should know about that I'm going to miss? Wow, I've got everything and nothing on this one, because in many ways, I could do this podcast for hundreds of episodes that involves decades of efforts. And in the end, I could argue that every minute of those podcast episodes would involve information that addresses this question. The simplest answer for right now falls into two sections: communication and schedules. I believe that spelling counts. That's meant as an easy way of saying there are rules, guidelines, and expectations for writing, and they are all valid. But more than anything else, I believe writing is a form of communication, a way for one person to move information along to another person, say as a writer presents offerings to a reader. We could begin discussing anything and everything written, though. A shopping list, an instruction manual for assembling a lawnmower, a novel. The definition of information from a writer to a recipient still applies. Now, in applying this to your question, we come to the formality of all of it. There are books, and there are apps, and there are on and on that are meant to provide the rules, the formats, the big red marks all over your pages that identify mistakes. I believe that, at least early on, you need to forget the rules and the mistakes. Let's do that by looking at the grocery list. For my wife and I could write down the word chips or snacks or Ruffles on the list and come home with the exact same package. It means the same thing, and I do fully mean I understand it as I walk out of the door and arrive at the store to be a single item, and I know exactly what I am taking off the shelf. My wife and I communicated the information. We were successful. Some of that comes from experience. We know what we each like. Some of that comes from context. The night before I went shopping, perhaps she said we would be having sandwiches and she was going to make some onion dip, and wouldn't it be great to have potato chips for the dip? And some of it from generalization. Ruffles are Ruffles, and chips, and a snack. Ta-da! What the rules should do is make it so you can communicate fully to your audience as a whole. If I want all of my readers to envision potato chips, then snacks and even the word chips isn't going to universally cover it. Communication. You have to have an idea of who you are communicating with and how to connect. You have to have a way of making your images, your thoughts, your creation get to the reader so they can appreciate it and understand it. And all of the rules of style and guidelines and red pens cannot do that just on their own. As far as schedules are concerned, I think it's important to always be aware of how your project is moving along, what needs to be done, when, and even how. It's not just getting the writing done. If you have a target date for publishing your book, you need to be aware of how the PR work and scheduling appearances and so on fits together way ahead of that date. If you want a proofreader or an editor to work on the project with you, you need to make sure that their work will be done and not just finished, but finished in a way so that you can take it and incorporate it into your work and meet your deadlines. There are a lot of overlapping pieces in the process that require work and attention, and those things need to fit together in a schedule, not perfectly minute by minute, day by day, but in a way that allows you to complete your work by the dates you expect to have it done. Now here's our final question for this episode. Is there some part of the process that is harder or can be more frustrating for me than others? And for me, it's the PR and marketing. That's mainly because so much of it is out of my hands. I can't force a media outlet to do a feature on me. I can't call up a bookstore and tell them I'll be there on the 15th at 3 p.m. to do a signing. All I can do is approach them, professionally and courteously, the best way I know how. The trick here, and in many cases it should be something you apply to all of your work, is about valuing relationships, keeping records, and being open to learn and improve. Years ago, I was looking to contact a radio station about a book release. When I began researching the contact options, I kept finding the best one was an email. Not so strange, right? Okay, how about this? The address was traffic@radiostation.com. Not kidding, that was the format. Send your news tips, announcements, and community interest ideas in care of the traffic group. There is very little, especially when you are starting out, about PR and marketing that makes you feel confident as if you are doing something correctly. There is a whole lot of it that you will take personally when these groups are not responding to your inquiries, even though very often none of it may be unusual or a direct result of what you did and what they didn't. But there is a lot you can do to make things smoother, of better quality, and even more effective as you move along. learn from your mistakes, learn what worked well, and try to improve the next time you work on them. Been listening to Writing and Publishing with Dumb Old Bob. This podcast is brought to you by Parkside Backpack Productions in partnership with In My Backpack. To learn more about me, this podcast, and my writing, visit the In My Backpack site today at inmybackpack.com. I was assisted in the development of the podcast by Justin Gillen, Jay Gillen, and Karen Chappell. Justin is a phenomenal musician, and he wrote, played, and recorded all of the music we use on our podcasts. Jay is an extremely talented artist that has been delivering great work on projects with me for quite some time. In addition to all of his designs and efforts for Dumb Old Bob, he also created the iconic logo for In My Backpack. Karen is a creative, motivated, thoughtful woman that has been delivering countless exceptional technical results and ideas for our productions and has been a driving force in bringing our podcasts to reality. And while I would love to take all of the credit, the truth is, if you are enjoying the Dumb Old Bob podcasts, the talents and contributions of these three are playing a significant role in us being able to accomplish that. I invite you to send along your questions, suggestions, and comments. We have pages on several social media sites for Dumb Old Bob, and you can also reach us by sending along an email. Thanks for stopping in for this episode, and check in with us again soon. Backpackville, we're all friends here. Until the next time, have a great day.